Thank you all for coming to the beginning of our writing colloquia. We'll have these for really the next 8 weeks, 7 or 8 weeks. We won't have a session the week before spring break because I know you all have midterm exams that week and you'll be plenty busy. But then, so we'll have this one this week with Dr. Moran and another next week, and then we'll reconvene after spring break. But thank you very much for coming. We're very lucky to have Dr. Moran to lead off our set of discussions about writing, the writing process, and even parts of essays, and even down to the sentence level. Today, Dr. Moran is going to start by talking about introductions. What is an introduction? How do you come up with an introduction? Everything associated with an introduction, with introductions. And you'll, many of you who are first-year students this year are lucky to have Dr. Moran now, especially because if you do go to Rome next year, you'll have a lot of time to interact with him. So please welcome Dr. Moran.
Thank you very much. It speaks well of you that at 3:30 on a Wednesday afternoon, when you could be doing something else, you care enough about your studies, you come to get some extra help. Good for you. Let's begin with something my Aunt Frances would say. She was from New York. She had a very strong New York accent. She was a wise woman. And so she used to say something to us when we were kids that stuck in my head. If you're bored, you're boring. Okay? If you're bored, you're boring. I love that. That's really true. If you're bored, you're boring. Okay? There's never any excuse to be boring. Okay? Never be boring. It's just so wrong. Okay? You can commit the seven deadly sins, you know, all the time. Who cares? But not boring. Okay? That's the one sin you can never that offends God. No. Okay. Maybe offended by a bunch of them. But try to avoid being boring. Okay? In life, but also in the papers you write. Okay? Avoid being boredom. Excuse me. Avoid being boring. But to go back to my Aunt Frances's statement, if you're bored, you're boring. One cause of being boring is boredom. Okay? So you want to avoid boredom to avoid being boring. Okay, how does this relate to your work as a student? How does this relate to writing papers? And the specific topic today, how does this relate to the introductions of your papers? Let me begin even before you put pen to paper, before you open up that Word document. Okay, let's begin even before that beginning. Begin every paper with excitement. Okay, go into every paper with some excitement about writing that paper. And that's the best way to avoid being boring. Okay, don't be bored about your paper. And if you're not bored about your paper, very likely your paper will not be boring. Okay, this may seem a somewhat absurd claim. Wait, I'm supposed to, you know, go do a cheer about sitting down to write a Litrad essay, right? Yes, Litrad essay, the fourth one this semester, yes, right? you people in the dorms, right, you know, like football players for the game and they're pounding each other on the shoulder pads, right? You can do that, right? You're pounding each other in your hands, right? Your typing fingers, right? Right? Getting yourselves up there for the big essay. Okay, it may seem a somewhat absurd claim. We all know that writing is exhausting. There's something intimidating about beginning a paper. Professors still have to write papers, okay? We still have to publish. It was very funny, actually. This over Christmas break, I was in my office all the time, and you were Dr. Baldwin is the other person I saw all the time in her office, right? Because I think we were both working on conference papers, right? So even professors are perpetually writing their equivalent of Litrad papers. While you are enjoying the Christmas break without a worry in the world, we never get a break, right? We have to do our writing when school's not in session. And so I know just from recently having finished a paper, the kind of pressure you put on yourself, right? And the frustration, right? It's just this obligatory thing, gotta crank it out. How can you go into a paper with a sense of excitement when you're overwhelmed that way? It may also be that the topic initially may not interest you. Okay? I'm not teaching Litrad 2 this semester, so I can admit this. I used to find John Milton so boring. Okay? I always knew that Dante was wonderful, right? There's never any question that Dante is great. But the first, when I was 18 years old, the first time I read Paradise Lost and had to write a paper on Paradise Lost, you know, that was just dreadful, right? Actually, here's the thing. Okay, so you're about to read Paradise Lost after the break. Milton's really exciting. I think I get more excited now teaching Milton than anything. And the problem was I went into Milton not knowing that Milton's really exciting. Make this assumption, even if it's not immediately obvious to you, that pretty much anything you're going to write about in the core curriculum, pretty much anything you're going to write about at UD, if you go at it in the right spirit, should be kind of exciting. Okay? Because think about the stuff that you're reading in the core curriculum. In the Litrad classes, these are the best things ever written. Right? These are the best epics ever written. In Litrad 1 and 2, right? In Litrad 4, these are the greatest novels, right? In the philosophy classes, right? These are the most important thinkers, right? And what are they taking on? Why are these the most important poets, most important philosophers, most important historians? Well, they're actually treating the most important things, right? The most exciting things, us, right? These novels, these philosophical treatises, about what it means to be human, right? About our world, the order of existence, those key questions that you're immediately introduced to in your philosophy of the ethical life, in Litrad 1 and 2, right? Questions about what does it mean to be human? What's the relationship between human beings in a city? What's the relation between the human and the divine, etc.? If you think on all your authors as taking on these central questions, well, they're all taking on really exciting stuff, right? And so even if initially John Milton seems really boring, keep at it. John Milton's really interesting. Okay, so how do you then discover that John Milton's really interesting so that you go into it with interest? You go into it with excitement. And then you start writing your papers and you're excited. Well, here's where discipline comes in, okay? The other day, yesterday, in a Shakespeare class, we were talking, we were talking about love, Midsummer Night's Dream, but the matter of education came up. And somebody pointed out that discipline comes before desire in education. Maybe not in romantic love, but in education, discipline actually leads to desire. That if you discipline yourself, okay, and you make yourself sit down and finish Paradise Lost, and not look at text messages every 2 minutes, right? Turn off your cell phone for a couple of hours. Right? Just completely exist as a cell phone even exists, right? And go to some place where you can listen, you can read Paradise Lost, maybe even read it aloud and be swept away by Milton's poetry. Right? If you have that kind of discipline, wow, then you actually find that John Milton's really exciting, right? This is beautiful poetry. And you've got great professors who are teaching you in Litrad 2 and who are kind of pointing out things here and there about John Milton that make you see things you didn't see before. Right? So the discipline of being attentive in class, you're like, oh wow, actually there is something with John Milton's Paradise Lost that's exciting. Okay? And then from that discipline, you get excited and you become willing to give yourself to the work. This kind of act of self-emptying. So you just kind of give yourself to whatever book it is that you're reading, and you get excited. Okay? So discipline as a prerequisite for intellectual joy, discipline as a prerequisite for excitement. You go into your papers excited. You got an idea or two. Maybe it's still a little fuzzy, right? But you got something to work with. Okay? So that's a really key thing, is that you go into your papers with some things already that you're excited about. This doesn't mean that you're articulate, perfectly articulate about Paradise Lost, but nonetheless, you got something there, right? And something you want to think more about. And what that means is the paper that you're going to be writing is an opportunity now to make articulate to yourself these kind of initial ideas that are swirling around in your head, that things that you're puzzling over, but you really want to figure out. Okay, now I get to figure it out. It's the opportunity to make discoveries. So before even talking about, you know, what exactly to do in an introduction, I don't think you can be successful in an introduction, and I don't think you can be successful in a paper, really, if you don't already have just a spirit of discovery about the paper, and that you go into each paper with this idea of, ooh, I'm going to discover something. Okay, yeah, it's the fourth paper I have to write this week, right? And I've got a midterm, and I've got, you know, I'm supposed to be going to my student work job, and I'm on 4 hours of sleep. Okay, I have to grant the reality of the finitude of our time, and we get tired. But nonetheless, each paper is an opportunity to make a discovery, and you go into the paper with that kind of attitude that I'm going to figure something out. And I'm going to figure something out and share it with other people. It's kind of exciting, right? And so you're not going to be bored. And if you're bored, you're boring. And if you're not bored, you're not likely to be boring. Okay? So that's, I guess, the first thing that I want to stress is going to the paper with the idea that you're going to discover something. You got something to share. Okay, now let's get to the introduction itself. Because there's still the danger of boredom, okay? Even if you're so excited about writing about Paradise Lost, right? There's all these boredom is like a devil, right? Always there to trip you up, okay? And here's a place where students are often boring, frankly. It's terrible that a professor says students are boring. Here's a place where, frankly, students are often boring. The very first sentence of a paper. I'm astonished by how bad the first sentence is in papers that are really good. Okay, actually, I'm not demeaning your writing. I've learned so much all these years I've been teaching Litrad. Every single year I get papers on the Odyssey. Every single year I get papers on the Iliad. I go, ooh, I hadn't thought of that before. That's really neat. And I get excited. Okay? Your professors, I think the attitude of most of your professors towards your writing is, gosh, there are a lot of papers to grade. But each individual paper is an opportunity for the professor to learn. Each time a professor picks up a paper, it's kind of a new thing, right? It's a brand new paper to look at. So all the more then, and as a bright student, a thoughtful student, and the first sentence falls on its face. That just happens a lot. I get so many good papers by talented students where they just have no idea how to begin, how to get going. Here's one thing I notice a lot. A paper that, so not talking about content now, style, that stylistically is perfect, right? In a four-page paper, maybe I'll mark one missing comma or something like that, and except for the first sentence, there'll be, there'll be a comma splice, there'll be a faulty parallelism. I see this all the time. Students who write well, they trip up over the first sentence. And it occurs to me, oh, I think I know what happened. They were struggling to get that first sentence going, okay? And kind of finally, I was like, oh, I'm gonna write this, and just went on. And then they got momentum, and then the paper is rolling, and the paper ended up being sharp. But it's the case that first sentence can often be the poorest sentence in the paper. Watch out for that. Make sure that it just simply sounds good, that first sentence, okay? How is a first sentence sometimes boring? What should you watch out for, avoid? Just simply stating the obvious. I briefly taught at Hillsdale College, and one of my colleagues up there referred to this as the no duh opening, where it is kind of no response other than to say no duh. Right. Yeah, sorry to sound like a 14-year-old there. But you don't want to put your reader in the position of having the no duh response. Okay, where you begin the paper by stating something so blindingly obvious that you can't help but go, yeah. I have to admit, sometimes when I'm grading papers and the opening sentence or two is just simply stating the most painfully obvious thing, I'll do this. I'll actually, without even consciously wanting to do it, I'll do the kind of like the gesture of get on with it, okay? So what, you know, a sentence such as, Homer's Iliad is about the effects of Achilles' anger. It's not wrong. It's not terrible. The paper's not a disaster, but it's not a really good start either. It's kind of like, yeah, I knew that. That's really obvious. We all knew that. Tell me something a little better now. Okay? So watch out for stating the blindingly obvious. Watch out for the overstated, the grandiose, the lofty opening sentence. Is where the student has this idea of, oh, academic paper. I must try to show how cultured and high-minded I am. Okay, I'm going to say something cultured and high-minded. And so you get an opening sentence like, Since the dawn of time, human beings have yearned for beauty and truth. Yeah. Okay. I gotta say, the physical gesture I want to make when I get those sentences, I want to pretend I have a pin in my hand and go. Okay, like there's a balloon that just needs popping right there. Okay. So, I mean, watch out for the overwrought. That's another temptation for that opening sentence, the overwrought. Related to that, a third category of bad opening sentences. Here's a word that, good SAT word for you here. The encomiastic, from the noun encomium. An encomium is a statement of praise. So the encomiastic introduction would be something like, Homer is one of the world's great poets, his epics long inspiring the human spirit. Yeah, that's true, but it's not really saying anything, okay? So watch out for opening statements that just don't really say anything, that don't get the paper going. These are not interesting because they're not saying anything distinct, not saying anything that's telling the reader something that's not already obvious, not interesting because it's neither giving the reader something to think on, nor indicating to the reader that this is a paper where you can have a particular take on things, a particular take on an important subject. So let me restate that last part and state it now positively. What works best in an opening sentence, and the opening sentence is that you're already giving the reader something interesting, something to think on, that you're already showing to the reader that you're going to have a particular take on an important subject. Now, this does not mean that you have to begin with your thesis statement. No. In fact, it's generally a good idea that traditional place for the thesis statement at the end of the introduction, I think, most of the time, that's where it needs to be. So it's not saying that you have to begin immediately with your thesis statement, but that you begin with something interesting. Okay? Now, that interesting thing might be an observation. It might be a strong assertion, not necessarily the assertion of your thesis statement, but a strong assertion. So an observation, a strong assertion, a quotation. A quotation from the text that you're writing on. If you're writing on Dante, right? Most of you are writing Dante papers these days, right? It's just, I don't know how many lines there are in the Divine Comedy, but that's the number of interesting lines there are in the Divine Comedy with which you could begin a paper, right? Where there's just something immediately in that line that's grabbing, right? In that quotation that's grabbing, and that you use then to launch into the rest of the introduction. Could be a quotation from another source. Be careful with here. Sometimes that can work really well. You know, some great writer, from one of the other books you're reading this semester from another class, if there's an interesting quotation, don't strain there. Make sure it's clearly relevant, okay? Sometimes you get the sense of, you know, Bartlett's familiar quotations, the students kind of sifting through Bartlett's familiar quotations, looking for an interesting quotation to stick in there. Don't desperately try to find an interesting quotation. But if there is one, you can use it, okay? You can have a question, okay, or a puzzlement. You can immediately find something difficult to begin with. Whatever it is, you have options, okay? There's no one thing you have to do with that first sentence. You've got options. But whatever it is, you want to provide immediately something that's just going to interest the reader. Give them something to think on. And that may as well already be indicating to your reader, this writer's is going to be doing something interesting with this paper. This writer's going to have a take on it. You know, you've heard a million times, I'm sure, the phrase, you only have one chance to make a first impression. It's kind of the same thing with paper writing. Okay? Now, actually, your professors are forgiving. And it's our job to read the whole paper, right? And it is often the case that I'll have papers that end up being great after a shaky introduction. And so you can redeem yourself after a bad introduction, but you don't even want to put yourself in the position of having to redeem yourself, okay? Hit the ground running, Okay? From that very first word, hit the ground running. Make a good impression right away. Maybe another way of putting it is this. Establish your ethos right away.
That is, your character as a writer, and the character of the paper itself.
In fact, I'm going to say that there are two chief purposes to the introduction, and that this is the first of the chief purposes of the introduction, that you establish your ethos as a writer, your character as a writer, and the character of the essay that your reader is now going to be completing. A well-written, engaging opening sentence, as well as a well-written, engaging introduction, establishes the right ethos. It tells your reader, ooh, this is somebody who's got something to say. This is somebody who's thoughtful. This is somebody who's careful as a thinker. This is somebody who's interesting. This is somebody I can learn from. This is someone whose paper I'm going to enjoy reading. Okay? So you want to, at the beginning of your paper, establish, listen to me. I got something to teach you. Okay, without shouting, listen to me, I've got something to teach you. But the paper is well written, both in terms of style and content, that immediately your reader is going to think, this is somebody worth listening to. Okay, so that you're establishing an ethos that's even going to make you worth listening to. You know, the rhetoricians talk about ethos itself as a kind of form of persuasion, right? Now, if you have a bad argument and a charming ethos, I hope I'm not persuaded by you, okay? But nonetheless, if you have a bad ethos, it will undermine the effectiveness of your argument. Okay, let me give you an example there. Let's say you've got a great argument, but in that you've got that boring introduction, you've got that opening sentence with a comma splice and a faulty parallelism and a typo or something like that. Immediately, your reader is likely to think, is this somebody who's really going to say something all that interesting? Is this somebody who's really going to have an insightful take? Okay? Now, it may still be that you do have an insightful take on things. It may still be that you do have a good argument. But your reader, who may not know you perfectly, may make a snap judgment. This paper's not going to be any good. Okay, again, your professor's at UD. We're charitable, right? We want you to do as well as possible. We're waiting for the good stuff. But nonetheless, you're not always going to be writing for people at UD, right? And you may be writing for some other audience that's not as patient and not as charitable. And if you, in the very beginning of your paper, establish a bad ethos, okay? If there are sentences that are clunkers, right? Immediately your audience is going to be disposed not to take you as seriously. So, first key thing for a paper, establish the ethos. Okay? That this is going to be an interesting paper, written by somebody who's thoughtful, somebody who's careful. Care which is seen even in good grammar, even in proper use of punctuation, things like that. Okay, the second thing you need to do in an introduction, the first is establishment of ethos. The second thing you need to do in an introduction is make clear to your reader the purpose of the paper. And now we're moving towards the real meat of the paper, right? That argument that you're going to be making. So letting the reader know the purpose of the paper. So the two chief purposes of an introduction. And in fact, when you proofread, you may want to think about it this way. What kind of character does my introduction have? Does it read well? Is it interesting? Is this something that's going to make a reader be excited about continuing this paper? And do I make clear to the reader my purpose in this paper? And once again, now that we're talking about the purpose of the paper, making that clear to your reader, don't be boring. Okay? Once again, don't be boring. There's a particular way of structuring an introduction which I find a little boring. not wrong, but a little boring. And it's one that I think maybe the majority, when I teach Lit Trad 1, maybe a slight majority of my students use. And I always try to, not immediately, but over the course of the semester, I steer them away from it. And that's this. The introduction that's simply a summary of the rest of the argument. Okay? The introduction that's simply a summary of the rest of the paper. It's not terrible. It's not really good either. I think this is taught in the high schools when they teach the five-paragraph essay form. I think it's often the five-paragraph essay form that goes with it. I don't know who's talking about the structuring of arguments. The five-paragraph essay form is also very boring. But that's not in my purview today. But often the two things seem to go together, that the introduction is going to be a summary of the rest of the paper. There's a virtue to that kind of structure. The virtue is clarity, and that is an important virtue. And in all your writing, you always want to be clear. So that's good, but there are two problems, as I see it, with the introduction that's pure summary. First, that if you're writing a short paper, okay, say, you know, with three-page literate essay, and you spend half a page summarizing the next two pages, there's a kind of disproportion there between the introduction and the body of the paper. You're going to have then only two. There's not going to be enough meat in the body of the paper. And maybe here's what's even the bigger problem. I'll get to the body of the paper after the introduction. I'm like, okay, I already know where this paper is. I already know everything about this paper, right? Yeah, I already know, you've already played your cards. You've already shown your hand here. It's not wrong, but it's not the best way to do things. I should say this before I go on and give you better ideas, what I think are better ideas about the structuring of an introduction. See what your professor likes. I remember once dissuading students from the summary introduction, and I had a student come back and tell me, well, you know, I did what you suggested for a paper for another class, and the professor didn't like that, and said, go back to the, give me a summary introduction. So be aware of who your audience is, right? What the stand-up comedians always say, know your audience, right? You do need to be attentive to who your different professors are and what they want. Aristotle says the very famous definition of rhetoric, it is the faculty of observing in any given case the available means of persuasion. That's something you should remember. That's a good definition. Aristotle says rhetoric is the faculty of observing in any given case the available means of persuasion. The faculty of observing in any given case the available means of persuasion. And well, you have different cases. You know, one professor may really like this, another professor may really like this. And the good rhetorician kind of knows his audience, knows that you have to write according to different cases. Okay. But here's what to me seems good, what to me seems valuable. Clarity, yes, okay, more than clarity is so key. But you want to be interesting too. And so better than an introduction that simply summarizes an argument is one that sets up an argument. That's the distinction I'm going to make here. So as opposed to those introductions that are just, you know, a paragraph summary of the rest of the paper, what I think works better is when the introduction sets up the argument as opposed to summarizes it. The introduction sets up the paper's purpose. Okay, so now I need to explain a few things. Okay. First, what do I mean by establishing the paper's purpose? Okay, a couple of things. You need to make clear the general topic. Okay. But that's not enough. Right? That's a bit too broad, just a general topic. So you also then need to make clear something more particular, something more specific about the general topic. Okay? And that's going to be the focus of your paper. So yeah, you need to make clear, to establish the purpose, this key thing in introduction, you need to make clear the general topic and something specific about that general topic, and then ultimately your argument about that specific topic. Does that make sense in terms of the purpose? General topic, something more specific about it, an argument that you're going to make about that that specific topic. One way to do so is something a number of you, I'm guessing, already know. It's a formula, but I think a good formula. The funnel introduction. If you've been taught that before. So here's one possibility for an introduction to share with you. It's a formula. And I don't want you to be formulaic, but sometimes it's, dang it. Okay, let's try this one. I think we're going to have to go over 3. It's a formula. And obviously people don't want to be too formulaic, but you know when you're young, when you're first learning how to do things, I think it's a good idea to master formulas, get them in your head, ways to do things, imitate models. When you're young, I think it's a really good idea to imitate models. As you get older, you can start playing around. Okay? One of our colleagues, Dr. Roper, has a book on writing, teaching writing through imitation, and he points out until the 20th century, that's how everybody was taught to write. You imitate the great masters. Okay? If you ever study any of the great English novelists, how did they become great English novelists? Typically when they were young, they imitated somebody else. Then as they got older, well, maybe they'd imitate another person, and then they kind of start doing their own thing, right? And you learn from the other people as you develop your own way of doing things. And so here's a model, here's something to imitate. I think you should master it, and then ultimately play around, and then maybe find different ways to do things. But anyway, so what the funnel introduction does is it takes you from the general topic to something specific about that topic, to then an argument about it, the thesis. And actually, can you hand out, hand out both of those handouts right now. And there's a particular value in doing this. Okay? You know what, I should have told you, hand those out. I just wrote an introduction right before this lecture to give you a nice, I hope it's a nice example, of the funnel introduction. Then there's a second handout that's going around. I simply stole from one of my colleagues. I don't know if anybody has Dr. Kreider this semester. Dr. Kreider has a really nice book on rhetoric. And in it, he gives examples of 5 different types of introductions. So I'm going to provide you an example of the funnel introduction. And in the interest of time, I'm going to leave it for you to read these 5 other different types of introduction that Dr. Kreider points out, okay? So that double-sided handout has these 5 different types from Dr. Kreider. And I'm just going to lead you, though, through a funnel introduction, okay? And since all of you are, all the freshmen here right now are working on Dante these days, you're all reading Dante, I've got an introduction on one of the most obvious topics you get in the Divine Comedy, right? One of those things you have to talk about. What's up with Virgil? Right, I'm sure you've already, when I teach Lit. 2, I end up, I think, having 2 full classes that address that question. What's the deal with Virgil, right? So, let's see. Let me stop for a second while the handouts are going out. Any quick questions? Over what I've suggested so far. I realize that I'm covering a lot of ground quickly. We only have 45 minutes. Any quick questions? Can I clarify anything?
You said don't make the intro a summary of the reasons why you shouldn't do that.
I said that off the top of my head. It was in my notes, and I started saying, it's like, what are 2 reasons? The big thing, here's the main reason is this, that it's kind of boring. That you've already so given away your argument, not with just simply a thesis statement, but the whole kind of thesis paragraph, that if it's a short paper, you're not going to have that much more to say than has already been said in the introduction.
You've given away too much already. So you've given away so much already that the next couple of pages may just not have enough in them that's going to be new and interesting, exciting to the reader.
So that's really the key thing. That's really it. I said two, and I was like, and then after I said it, I was like, wait, what was I just thinking? And then it slipped my mind. Okay, so you've got a sample introduction that's gone around right now.
In the Divine Comedy, the intimacy between Dante and his guide Virgil is such that the latter even acts as the pilgrim's mother, scolding him on some occasions, counseling him on others, even having Dante hold him as a child would when they are on Geryon's back. The intimacy expressed between the two characters follows from the one poet's intimate knowledge and love of the other poet's work. Indeed, on their first meeting, Dante expresses his devotion to the Roman poet. May my long study and the intense love that made me search your volume serve me now. You are my master and my author. Has any one poet ever so honored another poet? And yet, has any poet ever had the effrontery, the nerve, previously to damn another poet? Okay? So, if you're writing, by the way, if you're writing a Dante, you know, why is Virgil damned paper, you're not allowed to use this one, okay? It's mine. But as an example, okay, so what did I do there? Well, in that opening sentence, I gave something particularly interesting, I think, going on in the Divine Comedy, right? That intimacy between the two of them expressed through Virgil as a mother for Dante, right? That's really neat. It's just one of those remarkable things going on in the comedy, right? So I use that as a way of getting the reader's attention. And then even before I get down to the specific topic in the paper, I then have a couple more sentences which are still establishing the general topic. General topic here, the relationship between Dante and Virgil. And ultimately, why does Dante damn Virgil? And so talk about Dante's love of Virgil's poetry, the character Dante, the pilgrim Dante, honoring the Roman poet by saying that you are my master and my author. Okay. So I have a number of sentences there, a quotation, an observation, which I think just, well, they establish the general topic, and I think they do so in such a way that are interesting. Okay. So we're here at the general topic. But ultimately, you need to go farther. And so, let's get down to something specific. And in getting down to something specific, I think it's nice to either ask a question or note a problem in the final introduction. Okay? So here's how you did it if you wanted to note a problem. Okay, the next sentence would be, the reader's delight in the friendship, poetic and otherwise, between Dante and Virgil is tempered by the knowledge that the latter is among the damned and will not be able to join the pilgrim as he ascends to paradise. Okay, so now I'm pointing to a problem. Wait, Virgil, he's loved, he's honored, he's damned. Okay, so now we've got something more specific. How is he both loved and honored, right? Here's the problem, he's both loved and honored. And then that leads to the thesis statement. For all his admiration for his predecessor, the poet Dante damns the fictional Virgil because, who knows, okay? But there's a thesis statement. Did you see how we went from the general topic to a specific topic by noting a problem, right? That the reader knows that Virgil's going to hell, right? Okay, and then that leads us to a thesis as to why Dante would damn the character Virgil when he loves the Virgil's poetry. Or you could do it by asking a question. Okay, so after those opening sentences, you could then have, why would the poet Dante both honor and damn, both proclaim Virgil as a master poet and yet find him damnable? Dante regards Virgil so paradoxically because, and now your thesis statement. Do you see how this is a kind of funnel-shaped? I think there's a number of ways in which this is valuable. That there's momentum, right? There's a clear movement throughout the introduction, and that movement now pushes you into the body of the paper. It's valuable too because you've made clear to your reader this essential thing of what's the purpose of your paper. Okay? I think that introduction makes clear that purpose to your reader. I think it also makes clear the purpose to you. Let me stress this for writing. You need to be clear about what is it I'm doing in my paper. Students often trip up because they're not quite sure what they're doing. If you have an introduction that establishes a clear purpose to the paper, here's what you're doing in a paper, well, not only is that easy for the reader to follow you, it's easy for you to fulfill your purpose. If you got it down, you state it there in the introduction, this is the purpose of this paper, here's what I'm doing, then you know what you need to do. Let me add a fourth explanation as to why something like this is good. In particular, noting some kind of problem, asking some kind of question. You lift up the tone of it. Why are you writing this paper? Well, I'm writing this paper because I got to write 5 essays for Literary 2 and it's due on Friday. No. Why are you writing this paper? Because you want to figure out why it is that Dante would damn Virgil despite loving his poetry. Honoring him as a poet. Do you see how you're establishing there a high purpose? That by noting that there's some kind of problem, that there's some kind of difficulty, that there's some question that needs to be answered, you're lifting the whole tone of the paper. Right? This paper is going to be one in which you make a discovery. Which goes back to what I was saying about it's more likely to enter into a paper with excitement in the first place. If you have a sense of yourself as being a discoverer, you're going to make a discovery to share with others. Okay, not enough time to go over Dr. Kreider's 5 other ways of structuring an introduction, but you've got the handout there. Look at that. Let me offer two more very quick thoughts in 40 seconds. The length of the introduction depends. Okay, you're writing short papers right now in most of your classes. So likely a short paper, but it doesn't need to be abrupt, like a 2 or 3 sentence introduction. That's a little too abrupt. I find even for 3 to 4 page literature papers, I always like, I want at least 4 sentences, 5 sentences, 6 sentences. Okay, so no need to be too abrupt. As you start writing longer papers, you may want to think about a more complex shape to your introduction. You're going to be writing an annotated essay at the end of the semester. You may have a multi-paragraph introduction. An introduction doesn't have to be one paragraph. In a short paper, it makes sense that it's only one paragraph. But when you write longer papers, you may actually have the introduction split into multiple paragraphs. And then the second, just quick point, the placement of the thesis at the end. I have to admit, I used to encourage students to do the delayed thesis. There can be something really exciting about delaying a thesis and stating in the conclusion. But I found that too many students mess that up. I think while you're freshmen, at least for me, see what your professor says. I find that I'm now finding with freshmen, just give me the old-fashioned traditional thesis at the end of the introduction. At some point in your college careers, you may experiment with the delayed thesis. There's a particular intellectual excitement to the delayed thesis. But the reason most professors, I'm assuming this is why most, usually it's discouraged, is that you can mess it up kind of easily. So I'd say for right now, probably do the safe thing. Do you say anything about that, about the placement of the thesis?
Yeah. I agree with you very strongly that it's a kindness to your reader to give your reader a signpost saying, look, this is where I'm going. Otherwise, the reader doesn't really know what to look for. If you wait until the end, it is much trickier. And the problem is the reason that it's riskier is because, and I'll say more about this when I give my talk a few weeks from now. That's how you write the paper, right? When do you figure out what your point is? 4 a.m., right? You work your way to the paper at the very end. Here it is, 4 a.m. up, you have your idea. But the problem is, the path you got there is not actually that useful for your reader. Right? Your reader would be much happier if that insight that you had about paragraph 6 that gave you that idea, finally, is something that you now go back to with new eyes and you can see clearly as something that's actually evidence. It's not just a man random wandering through the meadow, until you bumped into it, but it's actually, you now have the the goggles to look at it, well, goggles sound pejorative, you can actually look at it more carefully and lead your reader through it. So take that risk, put the point first, and then you and your reader will be more kindly toward it, will read your paper in a more kindly and a more attentive way. And attentive is good. You get points when your reader's awake.
Very good. Thank you for your time.
Regular endeavor classes.